have three people, we can start the discussion and keep it kind of slow talking. So this is the March edition of the Developmental Disabilities Advisory Board. Do we need to take a roll?
No.
Okay.
People are signing in.
We have a packed house tonight, and I'd like to open it up first to the audience. Any public comment?
This is Darla Held from Peace, and I wanted to announce that in working in collaboration with Mary Strelo and Children's Hospital in Seattle, the University of Washington, and the Healthcare Authority, we have helped get the doctor's training for the Center of Excellence to be happening here in Southwest Washington. It will be held April 26th and 27th at the UW Vancouver, mm-hmm. WSUB Vancouver. And so we have a flyer that is being passed around right now. And if you have a physician or a relationship with a physician, we are really pushing to try to get physicians locally to participate in this. It will not only help train them so they can be a center of excellence, but also help give them an ongoing cohort of support around serving individuals with developmental disabilities, dual diagnosis, and autism spectrum disorders. So as you know, there's been an upswing in behavioral issues and disabilities with behavioral issues, and this is one of the ways in which we're trying to address that on a community level. And I would like to publicly thank Mary Strelo for spearheading that this happened here in Southwest Washington.
Great.
You're not announcing that you're running for president.
Maybe she should.
I think please take it to any physicians, because Clark County, we are like a wasteland and lack capacity and competency of clinical practitioners in behavioral health, primary care, pediatricians, and probably most of the psychologists too, to do diagnosis. What that means for families is if you are poor, you really can't get a diagnosis. You can try and get up to the University of Washington, mm-hmm. but if you don't have enough money for gas or you have to wait a year, people will take any diagnosis they can, and sometimes they get misdiagnosed then into the mental health system. Mm-hmm. And then that sends people down a path that results in what one of our young kids ended up boarding for, I guess, 12 to 18 months in an ER, which that's really expensive, mm-hmm. and it's really traumatizing. So if you have the right insurance, you might get over to OHSU, but unless your people from Washington sign off on it, it isn't recognized mm-hmm. as a diagnosis. Or you can go get to the University of Washington, but when I was at the legislative reception, Seattle area has a year, year and a half wait for their local people. So the people from Clark County have no priority. And clinicians are struggling. Law enforcement is trying not to arrest people, but sometimes they're ending up in jail. What else is happening? Hospitals are overwhelmed, mm-hmm. and it's costing everybody too much, and it's especially costing families.
And one of the things that's occurring is because we have this crisis scenario going on, we have polypharmaceuticals being diagnosed to inappropriate diagnoses, which is spiking the increase. One of the things that's causing a spike in increase in behaviors. And so it's kind of like this perfect storm we've got going on, and we're trying to figure out how do we address it from a multitude of angles.
And if you're seeing your primary care doc in the next month, you know, invite him or her.
So I will take it to Evergreen Pediatrics. I don't know.
Please.
Has this been going?
Pick an extra one.
Yeah.
They haven't sent it out yet.
Justin said you have this electronically?
Yes, and I can send it to all of you electronically. Darla and I are on a call tomorrow. So I'm worried about Clark County not getting in because the healthcare authority pays the University of Washington and Seattle Children's to do this, but they can't limit it to Clark County, so other people can come from other parts of the state and fill up the room that we paid for. Just a little.
So when you say it won't be recognized if their folks in Washington haven't signed off on it, do you mean it won't be recognized by DD?
And others.
And Medicaid.
And Medicaid.
So for to be able to have Medicaid or any of the services locally in Washington State.
Oh, it has to be signed off on by someone with a Washington State license.
Yeah. Same is true in Oregon, I think.
So frustrating here. I mean, where a lot of the services are available on the other side of the river.
If you're Kaiser, you're probably okay because you get referred over to the other side of the river, and then your local, your local guy signs, your primary signs off and generally is here. So that's all the same system, But non-Kaiser and CMAR, it's a problem.
Any other community input?
I just want to announce that Cowlitz County is having a conference next week. I think it's Wednesday, it's the 14th. It's their first conference that they're putting on like this. Ivanova Smith is going to be the keynote. And there's quite a few breakout sessions. It actually looks like it's going to be a really good conference. And since it's nice and fairly close, just encourage people to attend that.
It's a conference on?
It's for families and professionals and individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities.
Just in general?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And where's the location of the conference?
I will send the flyer to Mary so it can go out.
Okay.
The ARC of Cowlitz County is hosting.
Okay. Great. Any information from the other board members? Hearing none, let's go right to the legislative update. Darla, could you please share the information?
So we have our most recent, you all have copy, smiley face page. We got through our first cutoff, so you will see. So you can look through, we had quite a few bills die. But some of them were bills that we were hoping would not pass through. So we're in fairly good shape at this point in time. There is a bill around subminimum wage that limiting people that experiences physical and mental handicaps from being permitted to make subminimum wage around the state. That is in rules. There was a bill that would have and changed the terminology, but would have opened up for individuals to receive to be able to have basically sheltered workshops, but they were calling it training day centers, and that bill died. So we're in pretty good shape. The biggest issue that we're hearing right now is that the governor's budget assumed a $9 billion increase in revenue. And currently, even if they increase taxes, what we've been told is that they're looking at maximum a $2 billion revenue, and that legislatively speaking, we're significantly hurting financially because we have assumed in the last two bienniums too much revenue coming up, so our maintenance of level effort has increased faster than our revenue pass. So they said financially we're actually about where we were during the economic, during the recession. And so what we're being told is if there's a fiscal note, it's kind of dead on arrival. That being said, there's still several bills alive, quite a few in rules. Most bills die in rules if they're going to die, so it's one of the big graveyards that you'll see. As you look through here and you see the little zombie man, those are bills that, even though they're currently marked as not moving forward or dead, they could be marked as necessary to implement the budget. And so they could come back to life.
So the special ed directors have said that, if you remember, anybody who was, we had someone from OSPI come and talk about a new funding formula for special education. And it would be weighted on how much a young person was, or a child was, in an inclusive classroom. And people, the special ed directors here do not think that's going to pass, but we have seen things pass with that zombie on it necessary to implement the budget, so.
Oh, yeah.
That's, yeah.
I mean, if it really is, I mean, in those, well, you never know who holds the cards at the end of the ballgame, and they could make anything happen.
Right.
So.
And as you can tell just by the breakdown of the categories, special education is quite a hot topic up there this time. There is a group of us that is meeting around the issues of children in hospitals being put in hospitals for long-term stays. And I say children, it's children and adults. They say it's about 50-50. And it's all over the state where individuals are being placed in a hospital for long-term placements, not due to medical necessity, but due to a lack of a community placement being available, right? Not a good option for anybody, not a financially wise option. And so there's a team of us that's meeting that's got individuals from appropriations and ways and means and the governor's office and the healthcare authority and behavioral health and CDA and I don't know, a bunch of people. And so we had trying to figure out our short-term goals and how do we try to stop preventing that, and then the long-term goals, knowing that it's going to be a lot to try to figure out how do we fix this. Part of it is due to the log jam that we currently have in our residential setting. Because the residential rate increases have not kept up with minimum wage increases, especially in King County, residential providers are not able to keep employees. And so there's like a 54% turnover rate in residential providers. So there, it's all they can do to even maintain the current DDA customers that they have in those residential settings, let alone bring in new. So we know there's a group, and I don't know the current number of individuals in the institutions that are wanting out that we can't find placement for. We have people in crisis in the community that have asking and seeking for residential placement. We can't find placement for. What happens is when the police are called, frequently the police or an ambulance will then transport to a hospital setting, and that individual ends up being placed in that hospital setting, typically for 90 days to 6 months, but we have had individuals that have bounced from hospital to hospital for like up to 18 months. So it is a huge issue that really kind of backflows back to that, the vendor wage not keeping up with the minimum wage, and us as a state really struggling with having enough employees to do all the work that we need to have done.
Well, and we need to think of new models, I think, too. It's been a long time since we've thought of new ways to support people in the community. So it's time to be creative on top of the wage thing. Because I don't know how the governor is going to get himself out of this one.
So, Darla, is there money in the budget?
So what we've heard from the governor's office is the top priority would be to increase residential rates, and that it would be, that's their top priority for DDA, and it would be a miracle if that happened.
So can you say again what you said about what they're talking about in terms of available
Funds, yeah. So the governor's, this is what I've been told, so I'm just repeating information.
Yeah, yeah.
Governor's budget assumed $9 billion increase. If they do some tax changes, they think they can only get to a $2 billion increase in revenue. Our current maintenance of effort level has gone up faster than the revenue has. So that's one reason why we're in this scenario. We're almost, you know.
So they're entertaining cut scenarios, some cuts, not necessarily to DD, but okay.
Right.
Okay.
So the only, and the priority right now statewide, when you're in Olympia, all the conversation is around behavioral health because of the True Blood lawsuit that occurred with the state. So that is the crisis spot where if there's money that's going to be spent, the first money that's going to be spent is going to be on the True Blood lawsuit.
Yeah.
So really looking at, okay, where does DD and mental health intersect, and is that something we can work on, right, to try and at least etch out a little bit of our funding, right? The other issue goes back to the fact that developmental disabilities is the only social services that is not forecasted in the state of Washington. So that is a huge problem.
Why is that?
So forecasting means that
no, but why
she knows
is
why,
it?
Why is it?
Yeah, no, why is it the only one that is not forecast?
I have no idea. If they would forecast it, our jobs would be significantly easier.
It probably because it would cost money then.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
Why?
Because then you're held accountable for every penny that you spend. And so I took this question to Dee Dee a long time ago now, and I just got, you know, blank stare and no, we're not going to do that. So it does. It takes resources. You need somebody skilled to do it. But what it does is it gives the department a lot more flexibility in how they spend the money. Because when it's forecasted, then you put that, then you can track the spending against the forecast. Where and any and that's, I'm not criticizing the agency. Any agency would want to do that. Would want that flexibility. The problem is it makes your budget seem like a big, as my boss put it when I was working there, a big blob, and it just looks prime for cuts. Because nobody can say where the money's going.
Before, that might have made more sense, but now that not every dime, but 99.9% of the money that DDA spends is federal match with the waiver, CMS is directing how each of those dollars are spent, so the agency no longer has the flexibility that it used to have.
They still have some.
Not lots.
But some can make a lot of difference when you're trying to run an organization. That's, and they didn't really have lots to be, you know, to begin with. But
they did to begin with, but not since they had gotten federal.
Yeah.
But back during the recession, when we took all the things that was state only dollars and we rolled it in and we made IFS a waiver and stuff so we could pull down the federal match, it took away so much of that flexibility that we had.
Yeah.
And so, and then CMS continues to take away flexibility as far as the behavioral supports for children and stuff. I can't ever remember that group of letters, but.
So at this point, it may come down to just the resources that you need. I mean, because they're hard to find talented people who can do that work, and they're expensive.
Yeah.
So maybe that's it.
Yeah. And it's hard because, you know, we have what I think, statistically speaking, we have 95,000 individuals in the state who experience an intellectual and developmental disability, and there's only like 48,000 on the DDA caseload.
Yeah.
So that's a huge issue too. I mean, if everybody who would technically qualify step forward and raise their hand and want supports, we would be in a significantly different position than we are today.
But no, you'll never have everybody standing up. Some people don't. I know a family. They don't want anything. And
we're less than 50%.
Yeah. And that's because of a lack of resources. I mean, they've been told they're not going to get anything, so why sign up?
Correct.
Yeah. And it's hard to jump through the hoops.
Yes.
And it's easier to go through other doors than it is DDA. You can go through aging and disability and receive a lot of the same services that you would get through DDA, and it's a much easier entry point. A lot of the families who are struggling actually end up going through the mental health door, right? So that goes back to that COE training we were talking about earlier, where if you go through a different door, you know, you have somebody who clearly is on the autism spectrum, that you can tear it apart and say it's ADD, it's depression, it's sensory processing, it's oppositional defiant, it's OCD, right? You get this cluster of mental health diagnoses, and you go through the mental health door versus the DD door. But how they treat that individual is more of a medical model versus an environmental model, and it significantly changes the trajectory and the capacity of which we can help that person develop.
Anything else we need to know right now, Darla?
If you want to go up on Wednesday, let me know.
Anybody from the board have any questions for Darla?
Well, transition's in the maintenance budget.
Yeah. So. Yay.
There is that.
And we did have transition, had a courtesy forecast for a while, but it's now, I guess this only lasts for a while. It's retired, so.
Okay. Well, next on the agenda is the housing conference. For those at home, this is the Darla show.
Peace is very honored to be putting on a Southwest Washington residential housing conference. On May 13th, it will be at the Heathman. I apologize, I forgot to bring the hand up. I will get them to Mary tomorrow so they can go out. It is an all-day conference. We will be having keynotes, and we will be having breakout sessions as well as facilitated conversations around how do we really increase housing supports for individuals. So we're looking at the brick and mortar model of how do we do affordable housing, as well as how do we help break that logjam in residential and get the supports and services that we need, and how do we look at doing creative and new ways to maybe do some residential options that we haven't looked at before. Most of the residential options that we have in Washington State have been in existence since at least the early 80s, with the exception of the companion home came in the late 90s, right in 2000, we got companion home model. But other than that, all of the current models that we have are pretty historically based and was actually developed for individuals who, as adults, did not have the opportunity to take advantage of IDEA and the special education and all the supports. So the adults that we have coming out of school now have had a significantly different life experience prior to going into employment and residential. The kids are leaving school at 21 and they're wanting to get married, live with roommates, have kids, have a job. They want what everybody wants. Yeah. And the residential settings that we currently have really was not created for that type of a lifestyle.
During the conference, are there any breakout sessions that are going to speak to the integration of housing and public transportation?
That would be excellent.
Because that's...
Hey, Walt, just sign
what
up.
Is this, a set?
I'm pretty sure that's what that was.
Yeah, I got a feeling. I suckered into that. Well, I'll talk to Sean. He's always happy to talk, but...
Lunch will be provided, and so we really encourage everybody to come. Walt, I will be in contact with you.
Okay.
So we can explore that.
Because that's one of the things that we found at CVAN is with the expansion of neighborhoods that are beyond the CVAN service area, we get periodically calls saying, why can't you help me? Here's a brand new house and a brand new subdivision, but it's three blocks away from where the 2005 Vancouver urban growth boundary is, or where they put the housing units are at least 10 blocks away from a bus stop. And that's a concern for me, because it just makes the whole, it compounds the whole problem. And then you have individuals that may have a place to live, but they can't go to work, or they can't go to school, or they can't recreate.
Absolutely. And that is a huge problem. I know we just found out on Monday, because there is a new home that was purchased with the housing trust fund set aside dollars in Clark County, and found out on Monday that home was purchased in Battleground. And so my first instinct was, oh no, that's not a good location for transportation issues, right? So why are we spending housing trust fund dollars for developmentally disabled to create things in Battleground? That really limits.
There's parts of Battleground that would be fine, but I remember this 20 years ago of the some of the group homes locating in the less expensive properties outside of the Vancouver city limits as a way to be able to afford the homes, but then they weren't able to get any C-VAN services. I mean, we're talking in the rural areas near Yakult, Amboy, the center and stuff like that, that even when we were a countywide concern, we weren't able to provide C-VAN services, at least there. So that's a big issue. If you would please call me, and I'll let Sean and our public relations team know about it.
That would be excellent.
And it just because of the way the whole community is growing, I mean, it's continued to be an issue,
right?
Because you look at housing everywhere, you know, any empty lot is being built on, and it may or may not be.
Yeah.
Well, and we're finding that even when we have like three or four individuals who experience disabilities going together to rent a home, that then the state's coming in and saying, wait, there may be licensure issues here, when you would think it would just be four young adults coming together to rent.
Right.
And so we'll be having the RCS people come down and talk about their licensing requirements and things like that. And we're going to have a section on technology, because we know there's not enough employees to do the work. And so we've got to figure out, how do we put technology in place where we could have maybe used people in the past.
Is Jacqueline going to present?
She's going to hopefully be there. She's not set to be a presenter, but.
But Yung Ting's house is amazing.
We use that as a model for technology.
Yeah, YouTube, yeah. Because they've done amazing things. Just the family you do it with an accessory dwelling.
Yeah, it is pretty impressive.
If nothing, have the video.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. We will have the video there. And there is, you know, so we've got, there's a group of moms that meets on about every 6 weeks that really addresses looking at these adult issues. And then we've got the Building Independence group that's meeting every Thursday, where we're trying to teach all of the different pieces that they need. And we've got the Parenting 18 and Beyond group. And so really there's kind of a lot of focus right now, it seems like, on these kinds of issues for our young adults, whether that's housing, transportation, employment, and how do we have a full life outside of employment, housing and transportation, so, which is exciting that those are the issues we're discussing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's different than where we were 20 years ago.
So May 13th at the Heathman?
May 13th. At the
that's
Heathman.
A Monday, right?
Yes. A lovely lunch will be provided.
And what time does it start? What time does it end?
I believe it starts at 9 a.m. And it goes through, I want to say, 4:30. I will send the flyer. I'm working on several different conferences right now, so I'll send the flyer and don't quote me on times, but I think that was our time frame.
Okay.
Because if it's electronic, I can send it out.
Yeah, we have the save the date in the flyer. I'll get those to Mary so they can go out tomorrow as well.
Okay, thank you.
I don't know, looking like
Camas like it was this afternoon. I don't think there's going to be a tomorrow out there.
It's snowing out there, huh?
Yeah, is it starting to stick here? It wasn't, yeah, it was
really. My car said it's 33 though.
Yeah,
Camas is getting, it's starting to build up.
Yeah, you're not.
Well, you guys all, three of you live in, well, two of you live in Camas, right?
I'm not in Camas. I'm just not, but I'm right on the border. I'm the east side.
Okay.
All right. So I have a question about this, because I want to communicate with the pediatricians about it. So will a doctor look at this and know what it gets them, or do I have to explain it to them?
It should be clear that it get, you need this other one too. Just a minute, you need the other one too.
Okay. If you could email.
I will email both to you.
What I'll do is I'll call my pediatrician and leave her a message and email it.
But
there's contact on there where they can reach out.
Great. I just want to know that if they're like,
what is this? When I read this, I thought the same thing.
Because my guess is that they have the same frustration.
Who does who should attend?
This flyer is a dinner the night before, but it tells them on here that they're getting category 2 CME
credit.
Okay. And
this will help them identify autism spectrum disorder.
They can be blessed to be able to diagnose it if they raise their hands.
Got it.
Need a couple in town to raise their hands.
Okay.
But they can come to the training and come to the dinner and not raise their hand.
Okay.
They're welcome to come whether they decide to raise their hands or not, but they have to go to their training.
But we need somebody who raises their hand in the community, right?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
Because we can't, I mean, it's usually the people that least can afford it or manage it that get stuck in the whole insurance mess, you know.
Yeah.
It's usually the people who are poor, the people who can't throw their weight around. And so, or the people that are just plain overwhelmed.
And so is this exclusively for doctors, MDs at this time? Because
there's going to be about 10 slots, and so you could talk to Alan about this, because I've not been able to get back to the ESD. Jeff's been sick. There's about 10 slots for teachers and clinical behavioral health people. But the clinical behavioral health people and the teachers will not be able to diagnose unless somebody has a clinical psychologist in their pocket. They could do it.
Okay.
They could come and get blessed.
Okay.
But it would be good to have some teachers, a small smattering of teachers or school
SLPs
people.
SLPs especially.
Yeah. And then a small smattering of clinical mental health people, because they're the ones that end up on the front line not knowing what to do, and then they go to their psychologist or the psychiatrist and they don't know anymore.
One of the things that we're hoping to develop down here that's happening across the state is SMART teams. And so it's school, medical, I don't know who else, but where the teams all come together and work in collaboration, almost like a wraparound model, but it's the schools and the medical and the family, and everybody comes together as a team around individuals with high behavioral issues. And that's happening in many places in the state. And one of our hopes is that with this training, we'll be able to help set that up down here.
Right. So we do need some teachers there, and it was an excellent question. And, I need to get back to...
None of them are really, Linda. I can take pictures of them.
You can. I'll send it out to you electronically too tomorrow. And it's the University of Washington's flyer. We tried to make a change. They weren't having it. So you may need both for the dogs.
Yeah, I just want to explain. I mean, the point I need to make is that this would make it possible. And because, and my guess is when I explain this to, I mean, I'll try and talk to my daughter's pediatrician, she'll be like, yes, I recognize that's a need. And so even if she won't go, she would communicate.
If she can communicate it.
I think there's like 20 pediatricians in that practice too.
That's great.
Yeah.
We just need a few to show up
across
the county, and we need to get the word out. We're going to be talking up to the university and children's tomorrow about this very thing, because initially they were going to take care of that part, and they haven't exactly come through in that manner. So I feel like I'm kind of going like this to the doctor's office.
Whatever gets the job done. Any other issues that we should tackle in the next couple minutes before the state of the county? Nothing? I hear nothing? Okay. Well, thank you for your time. We're adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.